Our reading today is going to be from Mark chapter 8 and starting at verse 11. That's on page 1011 in the Church Bibles. Mark chapter 8 and verse 11. The Pharisees came and began to question Jesus. To test him, they asked him for a sign from heaven. He sighed deeply and said, "Why does this generation ask for a miraculous sign? I tell you the truth, no sign will be given to it." Then he left them, got back into the boat, and crossed to the other side. The disciples had forgotten to bring bread, except for one loaf they had with them in the boat. "Be careful," Jesus warned them. "Watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees and that of Herod." They discussed with one another and said, "It's because we have no bread." Aware of their discussion, Jesus asked them, "Why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not see or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see, and ears but fail to hear? And don't you remember when I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up?" 12, they replied. "And when I broke the 7 loaves for the 4,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up?" They answered, 7. He said to them, "Do you still not understand?" They came to Bethsaida, and some people brought a blind man and begged Jesus to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand and led him outside the village. When he had spat on the man's eyes and put his hands on him, Jesus asked, "Do you see anything?" He looked up and said, "I see people. They look like trees walking around." Once more, Jesus put his hands on the man's eyes. Then his eyes were opened, his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. Jesus sent him home, saying, "Don't go into the village." Jesus and his disciples went on to the villages around Caesarea Philippi. On the way, he asked them, "Who do people say I am?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others one of the prophets." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" Peter answered, "You are the Christ." And Jesus warned them not to tell anyone about him. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. We've been in the Gospel of Mark now since the end of September, so almost 4 months, and we're about halfway through. But do you remember, right back at the beginning, I showed a video about the big picture, what Mark is all about, and it divided Mark into two halves. And we saw that in the first half, leading up to the middle of chapter 8, Mark asked the question, "Who is this Jesus? Look at the things he does." Of course, he gives us, his readers, a secret insight and tells us the answer from the very beginning. But for the people in the story, the disciples, the crowds, Jesus' enemies, it was all still up in the air. And you almost want to bang their heads together. "Come on, can't you see it yet?" And the climax, the central point of the gospel, is that short passage at the end of today's reading, where Peter finally gets it and says, on behalf of all the disciples, "You are the Christ, the Messiah, the King." And you sigh with relief. At last, somebody's got it. And the rest of Mark will be about how Jesus explains what his being the Messiah actually means in terms of what he must do, how he will be rejected and suffer and eventually die to save his people. Not at all what they were expecting the Messiah to do. But today we've reached that decisive moment, Peter's confession, "You are the Christ, the Messiah." But that only comes after the 3 other stories we've had in today's reading. The Pharisees demand a sign. The disciples are puzzled about bread, and a blind man in Bethsaida is given his sight. Now, by now you should be familiar with what I'm about to say, that Mark doesn't just drop stories at random into his gospel, but he collects them together to emphasize a particular theme. And that's the case here as well. Because these are all stories around one theme, and it's this: can the blind be made to see? And the blindness he's talking about is not just physical, it's spiritual. Being blind to what God was doing right in front of them. So let's start with the Pharisees. Give us a sign from heaven, they say. So, something more than the lepers being healed, the blind being given their sight, demons being driven out, storms being calmed with just a word, crowds being fed in the wilderness, sins being forgiven. No, we want something really convincing. And this from the people who'd already announced that the healings he did must be the work of the devil, and who are already making plans to kill him. We saw both of those right back in chapter 3. So give us a sign, and then we'll believe. Well, no, because they'd already decided not to believe. That's why the word that Mark uses is that they did it to test Jesus, to tempt him, to be a trial to him, not least to his patience. And his response is robust. This generation will never be given a sign. They tell me that the form of words used here is like one you would use for an oath, like, I swear that you will never be given anything. It's that strong. And Jesus leaves them, and he goes somewhere else. And I said the question in all these stories was this: can the blind be made to see? And here's the first kind of blindness: willful, hard-hearted, self-imposed spiritual blindness. That they of all people should have been able to see Israel's God fulfilling his ancient promises, the promises they all believed in. But they would not have him. And they would not see it. And Jesus leaves. And the warning is there for us. We can't harden ourselves against him forever and assume the door will always be open for us. At some point, he accepts our rejection and leaves us to ourselves and our chosen course. So, can these blind be made to see? Apparently not. But then we come to a second group, and this time it's the disciples. Now, you've probably spotted that the disciples don't come across in Mark as what we call the sharpest tools in the box. Remember that Mark is based on Peter's memories, and he was one of them, remembering his own shortcomings with all due humility. But once again, they just seem so dim-witted. They just don't seem to get what Jesus is on about. Because he gives them a warning about the Pharisees' lack of belief. And they end up worrying that he's complaining that they've forgotten to bring enough bread. Remember, he's just fed 5,000 and then 4,000 people right in front of them. They were the ones who handed it out and collected the leftovers. A meal for 13 might not be too hard for him. But he's warned them about the yeast of the Pharisees and Herod. In those days, you didn't make your bread by getting a nice fresh yeast out of a packet, you know, results guaranteed every time. Instead, you kept a bit of the old dough from yesterday's baking. It's called the leaven. And you use that to make your bread rise for today's baking. And that was more risky because sometimes it did go off. And if it did, it would contaminate the whole batch of new dough. So Jesus tells them to avoid the leaven, the yeast, the unbelief in this case of the Pharisees, and old King Herod as well for good measure. Don't let their rejection of what God is doing seep in and poison your life with God. Don't let it blind you. But of course, they don't get it. He's talking about bread, so it must be because we've only got this one loaf between us for a long journey. I told you we should have brought more. And you could almost hear the note of exasperation in Jesus' voice. Do you still not understand? You were there when I fed the crowds. You can remember the numbers of the leftovers well enough. Do you still not get it, what all this has been showing you? So, are they for the chop too, like the Pharisees? Will he move on and leave them behind? Maybe find some disciples, Mark 2, who are a bit more with it? Well, no. Because there is all the difference between the outright rejection of the Pharisees and the slowness of the disciples to understand. And with them, he is patient and kind. He may be amazed how dim they are, but he still keeps teaching them. He still keeps showing them the way. They are blind, yes, but can they be made to see? Well, there's hope yet. Because we then have the third story, the blind man in Bethsaida. And this story is most unusual because Jesus has two goes at healing him. The first time the man says he can just see vague shapes. It's only the second time that he can see clearly. So what's that all about? Usually Jesus just says the word and the person is healed instantly. Why two goes this time? Is he losing his touch? And I think it's there because this story is told right next to the one about the disciples. They're only picking up very slowly, if at all, what Jesus is about. They're only seeing dimly. So does Jesus give up on them? No. He goes back and treats them again and again if necessary, until finally they can see clearly. So can the blind be made to see? Well, yes, but sometimes it takes time. Sometimes several goes might be needed. And we thank God that he is patient with us. Let's just avoid that slowness we have, turning into the hard-heartedness of the Pharisees. So there is hope here for us, because we can look at the disciples and so often see ourselves. How often do we straight away get the things Jesus is telling us? Rather, how often do we miss the point? How often does it take time with us? I think that's why Peter and Mark paint them in such a dim-witted light. Because that's so often our experience as modern-day disciples. But Jesus comes back and deals with them again and again until finally they can see clearly. And we thank God for his patience. So what's the difference between them and the Pharisees? One rejected Jesus outright and were left to themselves. The others were just slow to understand, but were still there with Jesus and able to be taught. Let's not be complacent about that. He is amazed, even exasperated with them, but he does persist with them. Until finally they do get it. And that happens in the last part of today's reading. He asked them a question, an easy one to start with. Who do people say I am? Easy because it's just reporting the local gossip. It's about what other people are saying. And people were talking about Jesus. Remember when we came across King Herod a few chapters back? He had his own theories about Jesus. He must be John the Baptist, who I beheaded, come back to life. So they give all the answers that are going around. And they're probably all happy to chip in with those answers. John the Baptist, Elijah, or one of the other great prophets. All answers that fit into a mould. More of the sort of thing that's gone before. Like when God sent our ancestors some great prophet in the past to put them right. But then Jesus cuts to the real question. But what about you? Who do you say I am? And I imagine at that point it suddenly gets very quiet. Because everyone's willing to talk about what other people are saying. It's about them, not me. More a sort of exam question. But what I think, well, that's getting a bit personal. To answer that, I have to commit myself in some way to the answer I give. So a period of quiet, perhaps. And then Peter says it. Good old Peter. Could always be relied on at least to say something, whether it's right or not. But somebody has to say something, so it might as well be him. He does recognise himself as sort of leader of the disciples. And this time, he actually gets it right. So he comes out with it. You are the Christ. Remember, Christ is a title. It's the way the Hebrew word Messiah is translated into Greek. You are the Messiah, the King. You are the one God has promised to send to our people to be our rescuer. You are the fulfillment of all God's promises. It's you. And that's a big answer. And in saying it, I must be committing myself to that answer. You are the King, my King, and I will follow you. So can the blind be made to see? Well, yes. Because if Mark so far has been about putting up this question, who is this Jesus? Here finally is Peter, on behalf of all the disciples, getting it. You are the Messiah. Of course, what Peter understood that meant was a bit different from how Jesus meant it. And just next week, we'll see how Jesus had to rebuke Peter for his lack of understanding. But it has finally been said. They finally come to accept it. Jesus is the promised Messiah, the King. And from now on, he can start teaching them what it means for him to be that Messiah. And that's what the rest of Mark is going to be about. How he must be rejected and suffer and finally die to rescue his people. So we started with the question, can the blind be made to see? For the Pharisees, the answer was no, because their outright rejection of Jesus had hardened their hearts so much. They were spiritually blind and they intended to stay that way. They could not or would not be made to see. For the disciples, well, it took them long enough. They spent 8 chapters of Mark puzzling over who Jesus is to do all these amazing things. But here, finally, they've got it. You are God's promised Messiah. You are the King, the fulfillment of all his promises. You are the one who is going to rescue us. So what do we make of Jesus' question? Who do people say I am is easier. We can talk about God or about what other people think. It's always easier to talk about God as if he were an object, a thing to be examined at our leisure. There are many people who are happy to leave it there. An idea for late night discussions, but nothing more. Because far more challenging is Jesus' next question, but who do you say I am? That's personal. That's closer to home. Because God is a person, not a thing. He isn't there to be studied at our leisure. He comes to us, and he calls to us to respond to him like another person would. Who do you say that I am? Because to answer that is to either accept or reject Jesus. Because you can't say, yes, you are God's promised Messiah, and then just leave it at that. It demands a response. If I say, you are the Messiah, the King, then I must follow. This is the most important answer to a question I'll ever have to give. So I leave you with the same question. Who do you say he is? Presumably not outright rejection, because after all, we're all sitting here in church this morning. But are we still like the disciples at the start of the story? Still not quite getting it, still a bit uncertain, still blind. Well, he didn't give up on them. He still showed them the way, but he did want them to hurry up. Do you still not understand? Well, stick with it. God does give sight to the blind. Just don't take too long over it. Or have we been in a church environment so long that we know the words for the expected answer? Yes, Jesus is the Christ, the Messiah. He's the King, the Son of God, the Saviour of the world. Can't argue with that. But has that really sunk in as our answer? Because such a claim carries with it the demand that we respond accordingly. Is he my King, my Lord, my Saviour? Or are we perhaps refusing the consequences of those words? Yes, he's the Messiah, the King. But there's some part of my life I'd rather he didn't touch. It's too precious to me. It's too hard to change. To be honest, I don't think I really want to. But a king is there to rule, to be obeyed. And if he is God's Messiah, God's King, then he intends to rule absolutely in every part of our lives. Or finally, can we say with Peter, you are the Christ, the Messiah, the promised King, and in saying that, accept its consequences, that this King must be followed in every way for the rest of my life. Not that Peter knew it all from that point. We'll go on to see how he had to put right and how he did mess up. And it's the same with us. But his feet were now on the path of discipleship, of following this Jesus as Christ, as Messiah, as Lord and King. So who do you say he is? And what are you going to do about it? Amen.